Support for State Week comes from the following sponsors: Visit Springfield, PIORG, and the Illinois Education Association.
From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Well, the NFL season getting ready to kick off. There are high hopes for Chicago Bears fans. But after years of talks and even threats, the Chicago Bears have not yet finalized where the team's future home will be. Despite efforts from Indiana to lure the Bears to the Hammond area, the team has not closed the door on Illinois. We'll talk about that and what some numbers show from Operation Midway Blitz arrests. That and more ahead on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, good to have back on the show, Michael Puente, a reporter and anchor with the public station WBEZ in Chicago. Michael, thanks for being with us once again.
Thank you for having me.
And Michael, you cover Northwest Indiana for WBEZ. That is where there is this push to locate a new stadium for the Bears. There has been a lot of back and forth from politicians and even team officials. We've heard things this summer. But what are you hearing at this moment? And I know things haven't been finalized, but what's the latest that you're hearing?
Well, the latest is the governor of Indiana visited Northwest Indiana. He was here on Tuesday. And there he mentioned that his office continues to meet with Bears management twice a week in his office in Indianapolis. I'm not sure what they're discussing, but he says he feels very confident that Indiana is still in the run, that they're still being considered by the Chicago Bears. And he also mentioned that the reason it's taken a long time because there's a new area of Hammond, not too far from the original location that they were looking at, but there's a new area that they're looking at that they're doing more soil testing and studying. The issue is that there's an existing business in this new location, so that business would have to be moved. So he says they're doing their due diligence in looking over this second area of consideration, but they feel very confident that they could still get the Chicago Bears to Hammond.
You mentioned that soil samples, things like this. So what is the history of that site that would require that?
Well, right now there's like a chemical company that is located in this area that they're looking at in Hammond. So a lot of that, we're talking about moving. I mean, who knows how much it would cost to move that? Then will that area be suited for a stadium? Now, we should say that there is a huge BP refinery in that general location. In the first area they were looking at, it would be built over a landfill because there's a golf course over that. And there's been a lot of hemming and hawing about, you know, the pollution aspect of this area. But there are people who have built pretty sizable homes in that area. You got Whiting nearby. People seem to live in somewhat peaceful, friendly area of this part of Northwest Indiana. So there are people that live there now. So putting a stadium, it might work. And it really is, it couldn't get any closer to Chicago. Hammond, of course, abuts Chicago. It's a neighbor. They actually touch on the state line right there. And it would literally be like a mile or two, probably less than a mile into Hammond from Chicago. So it would benefit parts of the southern reaches of Chicago, the south side of Chicago, southern suburbs. So it couldn't be any closer to Chicago in the area that they're looking at.
Yeah, that's a good point to make because I think it's hard for some people who aren't as familiar with the Chicago area to understand that. But I lived in the southwest suburbs for several years, around the same area that Charlie grew up in, Joliet area. He knows that well. Hammond, just a shorter trip for many in that region than, say, certainly a much shorter trip than, say, going to Arlington Heights, which is where the Bears have also been talking about having a stadium in Illinois. So I could see even some Bears fans preferring that they move to Northwest Indiana rather than all the way up to Arlington Heights. Charlie, what do you think about that?
I think it's still very much up in the air, but I'm guessing that the Bears would much prefer being in Arlington Heights, where they already own the land, if they can get a deal on property taxes. That's the big hang-up. They want to guarantee that for the next, the next 10 million years, they won't have to pay increased property taxes based on the value of the property. Rather, they will cut a deal with local government saying, we'll give you a dollar this year and we'll give you a dollar ad infinitum. I mean, obviously not a dollar, but they want some certainty. And the local governments aren't quite willing to do that. The Governor J.B. Pritzker, has said, we'll pay for the infrastructure, but we're not going to pay for the stadium, and we're not going to get involved to basically force local governments to take that idea of this payment in lieu of taxes. So, as I say, I think that when all is said and done, there will be a deal worked out, probably after, well, it would have to be after the election, because the legislature is not going to be in session until post-election, so the middle of November. My sense also is that the package that was put together by Indiana to lure the Bears includes a lot of taxes on local folks. And I saw some reporting, I don't know, it was one of your stories, where some of the folks who live in the area aren't really happy that they may have to pay higher taxes to basically benefit this multi-billion-dollar franchise of the Chicago Bears.
That's right. There would be a heavy lift. And speaking to some in some of my own reporting, there are people, on the south side of Chicago who would favor Hammond because it would be closer. They feel they would help benefit their area a little bit more. But then you get others who would prefer the Bears to stay in Illinois and Arlington Heights. One thing I like to mention, though, as we get closer to the fall, and if the Bears wait to fall veto session for lawmakers to provide some kind of package, you have to remember Indiana goes back in session in January, and they could sweeten the pot there as well. So they would be in their own session starting up come January. There has been some hemming and hawing of some of the local counties of having to pass a food and beverage tax, but ultimately, I think it would go through if it's a done deal with the Bears coming to Hammond. Of course, we're still a long way from that being a reality.
Yeah, and Charlie, I mean, I'm guessing here in Illinois, just for what you were saying too about the taxes and the local property taxes, these negotiations don't involve just state lawmakers. They're going to have to involve these local officials as well. And so it makes things a little harder to get done, a lot more moving parts, the fact that there are more people at the table.
Yeah, and one of the things that the stories that came out this week, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said just this last week that he's been meeting with Illinois officials. He basically wants to get the best deal for the Bears, and he hasn't made any commitment. He says he's talking to people in Indiana, he's talking to people in Illinois. And my sense from that conversation is that we're a long way from any final decisions being made.
We'll talk more coming up in just a moment. You're listening to State Week.
Support for State Week comes from the members of the Illinois Education Association, serving 135,000 members of educators and support professionals around Illinois. IEA's mission is to promote excellence and equity in public education. When schools and communities unite, we all win. Resources and membership information at ieanea.org.
We're back on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler, and our guest this week is Michael Puente of WBEZ. So, Michael, like Charlie said, he thinks we still may be a ways away from this. Do you think that's the case, and are you hearing that there could be some movement, especially in the veto session for the Illinois legislature this fall?
I do think we are still a ways away, but at some point the Bears are going to have to decide. I mean, I agree. I believe the Bears want to stay in Illinois. I mean, there's just so much history there why would they want to disrupt it? But I also know they want a new stadium and they want to get it done as soon as possible. Do they want to wait another year? You know, every year that they wait, the price for that stadium just continues to go up. I will say this, there have been talk about, well, should Indiana put a deadline for the Bears to, you know, go for their deal or not? The governor has not said that. They said they have not imposed any kind of deadline to the Chicago Bears, that the Bears are still, in their opinion, in the governor's view, Indiana's governor's view, that they are still doing work on the Hammond site. And there's still that there's just still work to be done. I think if it seemed like the Bears were just stalling and not doing any work, I think Indiana would put a deadline on that. But yeah, there's still a while to go, but the Bears just have to decide whether they want to stay in Illinois or make that jump to Indiana. And I know it's not an easy decision for them.
And Charlie, Republicans, of course, are taking this opportunity to hammer Democrats, Pritzker especially, saying Illinois has lost the Bears. Of course, we just have been talking. That has not happened yet. But I did see this week a reporter posting a survey from the team that was apparently sent to season ticket holders. It asked if they're still interested in buying season tickets, a package for that, if the team were to move to Indiana. And we don't know the response that they've received on it. But what that tells me when I see something like that is it's not a done deal. And they're still, maybe they're trying to buy some time. Maybe they're trying to gauge the interest there. But the bottom line is this thing is not decided.
No, it's not. And as I say, something may happen in the veto session after the election. The latest, I think, that Governor Pritzker said that he wants the Bears to put forward a package of legislation that will meet their needs and then negotiate that with lawmakers and see if they can reach some kind of a deal. And basically, that's kind of where we are. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, Goodell kind of threw cold water on the notion that, oh, it's a done deal and they're going to Indiana.
Good point. I'm guessing this will not be the last time we talk about this issue, but we'll move on today because there's been another issue going on in Northwest Indiana over the last several weeks. And Michael, you've been following this. Storms that moved through, very severe storms that moved through in August, about mid-August. Gary especially has been in the news because of delays in getting power restored to many residents. Apparently, some people still without power there. What is happening? What, you know, at this point, I know people are very upset, have been upset with the response, but where do things stand today?
Well, Sean, you know, things are so much better than they were after August 11th. That's the day this big derecho moved through the entire region of Northwest Indiana, a 5-county area, just high winds. It was like a hurricane. It was really, truly a storm for the ages. Knocked out power to about 375 customers of the region's utility, NIPSCO, Northern Indiana Public Service Company. Thousands in Gary. Well, more than, it took a while for that number to come down. And in the dead of summer with so much high temperatures, people were suffering. And Gary, Indiana is an area that is economically challenged. A lot of people who live below the poverty line in Gary, who had to throw away food, who couldn't keep food. And so it was very traumatic situation for them. And that, you know, this week alone, there's still, that number has come down considerably, but there's still over, you know, 50 people in Gary without power. The utility says a lot of those situations are people where they have damage to their property, to what's called the weatherhead, which actually connects the home to a power line. Those have to get repaired at a cost of thousands of dollars. So there are groups, agencies, even grants that the state is trying to pair homeowners with to get those weatherheads repaired. But it is much better in Gary and in Northwest Indiana today. But that was a heck of a storm, and people are still recovering from that in terms of lost food, lost wages, It just was a really traumatic time.
Yeah, we've had a derecho beyond just being a regular thunderstorm. A lot of really straight line winds coming in that can do some very much widespread damage. Southern Illinois saw one of those a few years ago, and of course Springfield area was hit with that, and there were some people in Springfield without power for I believe as many as 10 days after that storm hit. Charlie, I mean, these are acts of nature, I guess you would say, when they happen, but it's still a long time to go without power, especially this time of year.
Oh, yeah. And one of the things I found interesting, one of the stories, and Michael, I can't remember if this was your story or not, but it was kind of analyzing what occurred in Indiana, going beyond just the obvious and pointing out some of the factors that were involved. And as Sean said, it was a derecho. It wasn't like a tornado, which comes and hits down and spins around for a while and then moves on. Rather, it was these winds, hurricane-force winds, 99 miles an hour, going straight through and just toppling all these massive trees, just uprooting them. And one of the stories I read was suggesting that these things are going to occur more frequently. And part of the issue in Gary was that there had been heavy rains and the ground was kind of saturated and the tree roots weren't really well anchored. And so when the winds came, it was easy just to topple them over. And as climate change continues and we get more of these kinds of events, this is something that's going to happen going forward. Right.
Well, yeah. This area suffered. I live in a town just south of Gary in Merrillville. We had a tornado that went through our area, knocked out power for 4 days to my house. Then over here, August 11th, the entire region suffered this derecho and knocked out power to my house again for about 6 days. So I was with a lot of those people who were having, trouble just, powering their house and everything. This same system and as, just knocked down trees after trees. And there were some areas that you could not pass by, not just power, but all communications. There was no way to use your cell phone. You couldn't text people. Even when you could get out of your house, gas stations were not open. There was another big issue. Gas stations were running out of gas. You didn't know where you could get gas for a generator just to power up things. So slowly it came back. But this same system dumped so much water in southern Indiana, central Indiana, Indianapolis. They had flooding, historic flooding in Indianapolis. 7 people lost their lives. So it was real. It was this storm was really felt widespread. And now people are kind of, scared now. Anytime you hear of a storm that's coming up, people get kind of nervous.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We'll be back with more on State Week in just a moment.
Support for State Week comes from Visit Springfield, featuring dozens of attractions and overnights on Route 66 in the capital city. Springfield is home to numerous Lincoln sites, Frank Lloyd Wright's Dana Thomas House, the Illinois State Capitol, and more. The Visit Springfield team can help organizers plan their event in the capital city. Attractions and tourism information at visitspringfieldillinois.com.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler and Michael Puente of WBEZ. Well, in the time we have left on the show, I wanted to mention some reporting that was done this week from WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times. It took a closer look at Operation Midway Blitz. It's been a year since the Homeland Security Immigration Enforcement Campaign in Chicago, and there were many arrests made there, including some who had some serious criminal convictions, many of them called the worst of the worst by the Trump administration. But this analysis has found that 85% of those apprehended had no prior criminal conviction. Michael, you've been following this, of course, closely. What do you make of those numbers? What does that show?
It's not surprising. I mean, even early on to Operation Midway Blitz, we were seeing people who just did not have any criminal record other than being here, going through the system. So many people who are quote unquote undocumented, we're actually going through the system in terms of trying to seek asylum or trying to get a legal status, going to their hearings. And a lot of these people who were just workers were being picked up with absolutely no criminal conviction, no criminal records, but nothing serious anyway. And so this, our reporting that came out earlier this week, is really just solidifying what we already knew, that a lot of this so-called going after the worst of the worst, it just wasn't meant to be. It didn't happen. It was just most of the people arrested, taken into custody, did not have serious records. And a lot of it, what happened to the end result, was just putting the fear of God into so many areas of Chicago. Areas like the south side of Chicago, southeast side, with huge Hispanic populations, almost became ghost towns overnight. People were afraid to come out to work, to go to school. People were in hiding, and in some cases, they are still in hiding.
Now, Charlie, you have said many times before, that was the point, you feel, of this whole operation, was fear, to create fear and spread that fear throughout the communities.
Yeah, and you recall these masked agents came in, and they kind of did whatever they wanted to do, and they bragged to one another about how they were beating the dickens out of these immigrants. And then there would be bystanders would shoot on their cell phones. They would shoot videos of what was going on that would totally contradict what the ICE spokespeople were saying. Homeland Security would say, oh yeah, we rounded up these horrible bad people and they were attacking us. And then you'd see the video and it was totally the opposite. And so it was basically exaggeration on the part of the federal officials. It was ICE agents and Border Patrol agents who were basically acting, I want to say, almost with total impunity for what they were doing that was illegal. And they got away with it. So yeah, this notion that this was the worst of the worst, it turned out more hype than reality, as the Sun-Times story said. And instead of going and seeking out people who they knew were problematic, the ICE and the Border Patrol would go to places, they just go into places where immigrants were known to live or gather. So they'd go to a shopping center, or they go to a place that where lawn workers were working, and they just grabbed people indiscriminately. Some of the people that they grabbed were U.S. citizens. And the irony was, the Sun-Times story pointed out that they had more success before they did this operation.
Well, Michael, I'm not there, of course. Charlie isn't either, but kind of give us a quick update. What's happening these days? Because this operation, I guess, is not ongoing, but that doesn't mean ICE is not still present and making arrests.
That they're not as aggressive, they're not as in large numbers, but there's still always concern. You always hear reports that ICE is showing up here, or ICE is showing up there. Now, I will say where ICE is very active right now is in Indianapolis area. There's a number of stories and reports out of that area that people are getting rounded up. The difference is, I mean, Indianapolis is in a red state. Indianapolis itself as a city is a blue city, dominated by Democrats. The only problem with that is in Illinois and in Chicago, where ICE was not welcomed by the state leadership, by the local leadership, by the mayor of Chicago, they are almost welcome in the state of Indiana by the governor, the lieutenant governor. You have a congressman down there, a Democratic congressman, Andre Carson, who's demanding answers from ICE, trying to get arrest records of who they're going after. So you do see a difference where in Indiana, there is more widespread support for ICE and their activity, where in Chicago, there is not. But you would think Indiana might get spared any kind of ICE activity, given that it's mostly a red state. But the opposite is just true. And you wonder, how much of that activity is going to come back to Chicago. And there's always a lot of concern about that. Again, areas that have high concentrations of Latinos, Mexicans, they are still in fearful, and a lot of them are still in hiding.
Well, it's time now for our notes from the field, and we'll go to you, Michael, first this week.
Notes in the field, there's always something that is coming up. I'll just keep it light. There's still a lot of fans in Indiana, Northwest Indiana, who are fans of both the Cubs and the White Sox. Of course, I follow the White Sox. And while the White Sox are doing much better this year, last three seasons, losing 100 games, you know, we all want more. We want them to start winning again. We're hoping Murakami turns it around, but we are very supportive of Sam Antanashi. It has become a fan favorite from Springfield native. So go White Sox.
Well, as a Cardinal fan, we'll see if we have time for that there. I may have to leave that on the cutting room floor, Michael. But Charlie, we'll go to you next.
Okay, well, I've been a White Sox fan, I'm guessing, longer than either you two guys have been alive. So the Flash Index came out, and it rose to 101.5 in August, up from 101.2 in July. A modest but unexpected gain. And that's according to U of I Professor Emeritus Fred Geertz, who compiles the index for the University's Institute of Government and Public Affairs, said the increase was driven by strong state tax revenue growth and a decline in Illinois' unemployment rate. But he also cautioned that stability may not fully capture the uncertainty created by recent turmoil in bond markets and the prospect of rising interest rates, developments that could weigh on economic activity in the months ahead. And there was also an optimistic report from the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability that said that during the first 2 months of the current fiscal year, July and August, revenue deposited into the state's general funds were up $515 million, roughly 7% compared to the first 2 months of FY 2026, with the three major revenue sources all showing good growth. The net personal income tax was up 5%, $167 million. Net corporate income tax was at $111 million. Net sales tax was at $216 million. Overall, as I said, the gains were over last year for the same period, $515 million more, a 7% increase.
That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. And our panel included Charlie Wheeler and WBEC's Michael Puente. Look for State Week, where you get your podcasts, through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.
Support for State Week comes from PiOrg, a nonprofit consulting firm providing resources for strategic planning, best practice implementation, and outcomes-focused program evaluation across the country, helping organizations make data understandable and actionable, enabling changemakers to strengthen critical skills and serve others more effectively. Pi, plan, implement, evaluate. Services and information at piorg.org.